Thank you, Gene. Thank you all. Just going to shift gears a little bit, get into mild uncertainty with greenhouse gases. And actually, I changed the title a little bit. I'm just concentrating on soil nitrous oxide here. But we'll see it's a pretty important agricultural greenhouse gas. Recognize our co-authors at Colorado State University Natural Resource Ecology Lab in particular. So first, importance of N2O. What's the role of models in this mitigation game? How do we evaluate models in uncertainty? And then this distinction between absolute and relative uncertainty is really going to be the sort of key new thing I want to present. And then where do we go from here? What do we do with this? So U.S. agricultural soil greenhouse gas emissions, a little over 500 teragrams CO2 equivalent. Out of that, the agricultural soils are about half of that. And you look at the soils, it's mainly the N2O. We actually think the soils are a net sink in this country, due to reduced tillage, improved practices, and CRP land. And a very small methane source. There's not a lot of rice area in this country compared to the other crops. So you look at that N2O, about 260, so it's about responsible for about half of the ag emissions in this country. Most of the other half is the enteric fermentation from the grazing animals and the manure piles. So we think we need models. Well, obviously to test hypothesis, really every time you run your model with data from a new site, you're really testing hypotheses that are built into that model. And we think at large scale to conduct greenhouse gas emission inventories, if you want to know the emissions for state of California or for the U.S. or for the globe and you want to do source attribution, you can't measure at that scale. So you have to use models. And then kind of the small scale too, if you think of offset programs, if farmers are going to be compensated to reduce their emissions, you can't measure every farmer's field. It wouldn't be economically or practically feasible, so we think you have to resort to models at the farm level as well to get at mitigation programs, for example. So I'm going to concentrate on our local model at Colorado State and the ARS in Fort Collins, Daysen ecosystem model. So Daysen is sort of the offspring of Century. Century goes back to the 70s. It originally developed to explore how changes in climate, changes in management could impact crop yields, plant growth, soil carbon levels. And Century actually runs on a monthly time step, and it's fine for those kind of changes, but if you really want to get to these trace gas emissions, nitrous oxide in particular, they're so episodic, you need a finer time step. You can't just look at your average soil water content, for example, and expect that to give you any kind of indication of N2O emissions. You could get the majority of your N2O emissions in one day following a big rainfall event. So you at least have to go to a daily time step, we think, to have any hope of getting nitrous oxide. So some of the key features, we think it's intermediate complexity. There's definitely models a lot more complex. There's models that are much more simple, like IPCC, emission factor methodology to get to N2O. We think Daysen's kind of in the middle. The inputs are easy to acquire, and it's pretty easy to simulate just about any commonly used farm management practices and disturbance events. Some limitations, and some is the key word here. I could spend a whole day talking about the limitations, but it's not a spatial model. It's just a point model. It doesn't account for say overland water flow. Any water that's coming down vertically as soon as you get into the system, there isn't any hydrology moving vertically. Another big limitation, ammonium is considered immobile. We do nitrate throughout the profile, nitrate leaching, and nitrate is certainly more immobile than ammonium, but that doesn't mean ammonium is not mobile at all, but we assume that it's not mobile. And we don't account for microbial diversity at all. There's a lot of things that influences N2O emissions, your community of nitrifiers and denitrifiers. We don't have that kind of detail in the model at all. Like I said, we could go on. That's just a few of the limitations. I don't want to bore you too much with the infamous flow diagram, but just give you, again, some idea of how complex the model is, what's in the model. We have a plant production submodel, an allocation of NPP among different plant components. There's a plant senescence submodel, which feeds the soil organic pools. So we have three soil organic matter pools, pretty detailed soil organic matter decomposition model. We have nitrification, denitrification, which are the big ones contributing to the nitrous oxide emissions. And as I said before, we do nitrate throughout the profile, so you can have leaching. Ammonium is really assumed to be stuck within that top 0 to 15 centimeter layer. And then similar to nitrate, we do the soil, water, and temperature throughout the profile. And user has a lot of latitude here. I just gave some examples of a horizonation structure, but you can make those layers be as thin or as thick as you like, and you can make your profile be 50 centimeters, 2 meters, whatever you think it is, the bedrock or the water table. You have a lot of user latitude there. Okay, and then just sort of summarize the main inputs and outputs in the model that we typically look at. So I said pretty easy to acquire inputs, at least for the U.S. You need daily climate, and that's pretty available, at least in the U.S. soil properties. All we really need to know is texture, because we can infer bulk density in the hydraulic properties like fuel capacity and wilting point. But if you have measurements on those hydraulic properties, that's even better. But all we really need is texture. And of course, we need to know the land use. What's the vegetation cover? You know, what are you growing? What's your planting and harvest schedules? How much fertilizer are you adding? When are you adding fertilizer? If there's any irrigation involved, what's your tillage schedule? How intense is your tillage? You're doing the full moldboard plow or just a more mild tillage? It's not going to be so disturbing. And like I said, we do most of the disturbance events, grazing, burning, etc. So that gets fed into the model. The model runs away. And there's probably literally hundreds of model outputs, but normally the ones we look at first, at least at plant production, we want to make sure we're getting the yields reasonably. So organic matter changes, there's often measurements on that, so you can get an idea how well your model is doing, if it's getting the soil organic matter correct for a particular site. And again, what I'm going to concentrate on here, the trace gas fluxes. We do CO2, methane. We don't do methane emissions for rice paddies, but we do methane uptake in the upland cropland systems as well as native systems. Then the end gas fluxes, NOx and N2O, as well as N2, which I don't have there, but just concentrating the N2O in this talk. Okay, uncertainty, now we're kind of really getting to what I want to talk about or emphasize. So the first kind of dichotomy we think of is model input uncertainty and model structural uncertainty. You know, when you're running your model at the big scale, say for national greenhouse gas inventory, you don't know exactly what the soil type is. You don't know exactly what the farmers are doing. You know, we have databases on fertilizer application rates, for example. But we have means and we have standard deviations. On any given plot of land, we don't know exactly what the farmer is doing. Even where we use weather models to drive day scent, the weather models, they're good, but they're not perfect. So there's that uncertainty. But then even if you did have perfect model inputs, our models are of pretty crude representation of reality. So that there's error within the model structure itself. And so to get that model input uncertainty, we do a model Monte Carlo approach where based on those standard deviations of the key input drivers. We do repeated runs. And to get at the model structural uncertainty, empirical approach is really just comparing with data. Now I want to make another branch, another dichotomy. There's really want you to think of there perhaps being two aspects of structural uncertainty. There could be the absolute uncertainty, which is what we typically look at. It's just comparing your model output simulated versus observed, see how close you come to the measurements. You imagine your typical XY graph, how close do you come to that 1-to-1 line, and what's your R-squared value. But then maybe from a mitigation perspective, maybe relative uncertainty is even more important. So it's kind of the same thing, it's simulated versus measured. But it's differences in emissions where you're comparing some mitigation option compared to the standard. You take the delta simulated and delta observed and then see how close your model comes. So this is absolute model structural uncertainty, which is this is published. This is what we think is pretty well developed. Showing for small grains there, we'll make two points. The model's biased a little bit and there's some spread. So to assess that structural uncertainty, we want to assess both those things, any bias and what's the spread. And if you look at the other crops on the right, there's not very much bias there. The model's pretty close to the 1-to-1 line, but there's certainly a lot of spread. And our empirical approach quantifies both of those types of error, so we think we have that pretty well developed. than just a little results. This is scale dependency, a confidence intervals. This is for our regional simulations for the US inventory. Confidence interval width on the y-axis there, that's just say if your upper bound is plus 50%, your lower bound was minus 30%, we would say the confidence interval width is 80%. So it's kind of combining your upper and lower bounds. And on the x-axis is our regional N2O emissions. So we thought it was kind of interesting that once you get into bigger regions, or once your emissions get above a threshold of about 4 gigagrams of nitrogen, then your confidence intervals are confined to about, you know, plus 50, minus 40% or so. But you get to small regions where the emissions are somewhat lower, your emission bounds can be very, very large, up to more than 1,000% or very small. And most of that uncertainty is due to the model structure. About probably 75 to 80% is the model structure, pretty minority is due to uncertainty in model inputs. That's one point. Now what got us thinking of comparing this absolute versus relative model error, this is from data from some irrigated corn plots in Colorado. So the top plot is just simulated versus observed average N2O emissions and gram N per hectare per day. And then on bottom is the relative emissions. But if we just look at the top, you know, particularly you look at those two bars on the left and the bars on the far right, you know, you'd say your model is terrible. You know, it's over-predicting, but by more than a factor of 2. But if you think of a mitigation, and we take the delta, so as someone interested in mitigation, I might think that, well, the high nitrogen conventional till is kind of the control, the standard. So let's take the delta, simulated minus simulated, observed minus observed, going back to that conventional till high nitrogen, then comparing the zero till versus the no-till with the inhibitors, the nitrification inhibitor meant to decrease N2O emissions. So in this case, now your error bar is, the model looks great. So we went from being off by more than a factor of 2 up top. On bottom, the biggest error there is less than 20%. So I thought, well, that's perhaps pretty profound from a mitigation viewpoint. And then the next question is, well, how, you know, this is just from one site in Colorado. Yeah, to what extent does this pattern hold across other sites where we've tested the model? Okay. So here's just a list of sites I've looked at so far. Again, the Colorado irrigated corn, Colorado winter wheat, Nebraska, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and some grassland in Ireland. So there we had to find what I'm calling the control and what I'm calling the treatment. And so the next figure is going to show these deltas between controls and treatments. And it's a little bit debatable which you designate the control, but that's one of my future questions we need to think about. So in this figure, the x-axis is designating sort of what was in that table, what's the control, what's the treatment. So in that first set of bars on the left, conventional till urea would be the standard treatment. We're contrasting that with no-till urea. And it's that same pattern across the board there. The absolute error in blue bars and that delta control in red bars. So we see this trend isn't universal. It looks like in about 4 cases, 2 on the left, 2 on the right, the errors with the deltas are much smaller than the controls. There's a couple cases where it's close to being a tie, and then a couple there towards the middle where the delta errors are actually bigger than the absolute errors. So there's maybe some evidence for this trend, but it's not, you know, certainly not universal with this data we've looked at so far. And then I did the same thing, just looking at an X and Y graph. So absolute error versus relative error. It's really the same thing as those bars, just looking at the XY. If you look at the R-squared values, they're not all that different, 0.87, 0.89. The relative is a little bit lower. But if you look at the slope, how close to the 1-to-1 line, we're going to 0.73 to 0.92. So again, I think there's some evidence that the relative errors might be smaller than the absolute errors, but this isn't 100%, that's for sure. So, if you think models are necessary to calculate both small and large scale emissions and for mitigation, quantification. Uncertainty depends on scale. As you aggregate, the error bars tend to come down. I'll say relative uncertainty appears to be different than absolute uncertainty. And if anything, there's a trend that those relative errors might be smaller. But one of the big issues is how do you define the control? Is the control, if it's not ag at all, if it's a native system, do we need some measurements of native and then contrast that with ag? Is that your delta? Is your delta the business as usual? Is it conventional till, standard fertilizers? Then you look at improved management options and relate back to the business as usual. But yeah, there's problems there too, because business as usual is, we have some idea what business as usual is for different cropping systems, different parts of the country, but it's still kind of a guess. We don't, it's a little bit of a slippery. And then what statistical method, I'm not sure of what's the best statistical tools to really quantify this relative uncertainty. Okay, thank you very much.